Well, tonight we are continuing our series entitled Seven Sins That Will Kill You Dead. And if you haven't been here before, if this is your first time, or if you haven't been back in a while, I want to catch you up on where we've been so far. So far in this series, we covered sloth. Sloth was the first sin that we covered. And what we learned about sloth is that sloth is not laziness. Sloth, a better translation, is spiritual apathy. And that spiritual apathy will spiritually kill you dead. And we talked about that on week one. Week two, we talked about envy, and we learned that wherever there is envy, it leads to disorder. And so in your life, wherever there is disorder, it is a root cause of having envy, of wanting something that you can't have. And then the next week, we talked about gluttony, and I should have saved that for this week, because after this, a lot of you are going to experience the sin of gluttony at your Super Bowl parties. But what we learned about gluttony is that gluttony is more than just eating a lot of food. Gluttony is actually anything that takes the place of God in your life, anything that is squeezing out God. If there's time in your life where you say, I just don't have time to read my Bible or to pray, it is a sign of gluttony, that you have poured too much attention into something that's taking your time away from God. And then last week, we talked about pride. And what we learned about pride is that pride results in two things. And the first thing that pride results in is us hiding our sin. And so we all sin, we've all made mistakes, but if you struggle with the sin of pride, it causes you to cover over sin, to be ashamed of sin and to hide your sin because you don't want anyone else to figure out that you're not perfect. Or it causes you to not be able to get over your sin. And maybe you've told people about it, but something happened to you 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and you still can't get over it. And that also is a result of pride. We talked about how pride and insecurity actually go hand in hand. Well, tonight, we want to continue the series. And like each week, I want to remind you of the original intent of the seven deadly sins. We're doing this series not because you can find the seven deadly sins in the Bible, because you can't. If you look for the seven deadly sins in the Bible, you will not be able to find them. It is something that the church came up with, and they came up with it for two reasons. This was the original intent. Number one, to help people learn the Bible. The original intent of the seven deadly sins was to help people learn the Bible. It's going to come up on the screens for you there. The second one was to help people become introspective, to help people become introspective. So the first goal was that you would learn the Bible, that you would leave. And I hope that every Sunday when you leave from here, you've learned something about the Bible and that you've thought about it. And the introspection is where you look inward. And it's not just that you say, okay, envy is a sin, gluttony is a sin, pride is a sin. It's that you start to look inward and say, hey, how does that really affect me? How is that killing me? And we've said this every week, that these sins, they don't kill you physically, they kill you spiritually. And so if you're not feeling a hunger for God, if even if you're saying, hey, I don't even want to be here, I don't even care about God, it is a sign of allowing one of the seven deadly sins to kill you spiritually, to come into your life and to push out the God that lives in you. Well, tonight we're going to continue this series and look at a sin that is stereotypically thought of as a guy sin. It's a sin that, for whatever reason, is something that people just kind of assume that women don't struggle with it, and it's just a guy thing. But I want you to know that I think this is a universal struggle. I don't think it's just a guy struggle. I think it is a people struggle. And now we're going to talk about something tonight that I think is killing a lot of people spiritually. In fact, when we allow this sin into our lives, one of the first things that goes is our relationship with God. These two things cannot exist. And what we're talking about tonight is the sin of lust. Now, just in case you're not familiar with lust or you don't know what lust is, let's go to the dictionary. The dictionary defines lust as a few things. Number one, an intense or unrestrained sexual craving. Now, when most of us think about lust, that's what we think about. We think of this intense, unrestrained sexual craving. But lust is more than that. And this is why lust is not just something some guys struggle with. This is a universal sin. Look at the second definition. It has two parts to it. 2A is an overwhelming desire or craving, a lust for power. So when you want to rule over someone, when you want to rule over something, when you have a lust for power, that is the sin of lust. 2B says an intense eagerness or enthusiasm, a lust for life. 3 then says obsolete pleasure or relish. And I don't have a fat clue what that means. And I also don't understand what a hot dog topping has to do with lust. But that's the third definition, and we're not going to pay attention to that because I don't get it. The first two, though, I get. They make sense to me. And that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about lust. And I want to mix things up today because I've said this every week, that this is not just a series for you to nod your head. This is a series for you to learn something about the Bible, but then reflect and to be introspective. And so normally I do all the talking up here, but I thought I would mix it up and just see how good you guys do at being introspective. I want to interview one of you. I want to pull one of you up here and talk about lust. It's going to be fun. It's going to be awesome. Now, I know that a lot of you just probably pooped your pants. In fact, I could tell by some of your faces that you got really scared. So let me just ease some of the tension. I've thought through this, okay? I think that even though lust is a universal sin, I think it would be more appropriate for me to interview a guy. So if you're a female, you're off the hook. I'm not calling you up here. So you can just rest easy, just chill. Also, if you're a first-time visitor, I do not want to embarrass a first-time visitor. So you're off the hook. If this is your first time here, you have nothing to worry about. If I don't really know you, you're off the hook. Okay? I know that a lot of people don't like being pulled up on stage, so I want to have a relationship with you so I know that you'll forgive me. So if I say, like, hey, buddy, to you and don't know your name, you're off the hook. Okay? If I know your first name but not your last name, you're off the hook. So I'm looking for a guy that is not a first-time visitor that I really know, and someone that's not going to kill me, someone that I've known for a while. Max. I'll take Max. Max, third row. Don't be scared, Max. Don't be scared. Max, I've known Max for years. Max was in my student group for years before I started a church, and now his family are a big part of Next Level Church. Max, come on up here. Come on. Hey, yeah, help. All right, Max, now I got to pick on you because I've already said your name. You're it. Come on, buddy. Come on. You know I'm not going to hurt you. You know. Come on. Get up. Get up. Give it up for Max. Come on. Get up there, big guy. All right. Now, Max, I promise I'm not going to bite. This is, you have nothing to be scared. You look petrified. Just take a deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. Okay, that didn't go over too well. All right. All right, I promise it'll be easy. Nothing too hard. Let's just start off with a simple question. When was the first time that you experienced the desire for lust?
Are you serious?
Yep. Gonna need an answer there.
I don't want to do this.
All right. Well, I won't force you to do it. It's a little. Hey, but I want to promise you though, it's really no big deal. None of these people are going to judge you.
No, stop.
It's all right.
No.
It's not.
I don't want to do. How about you tell them your first experience with what? No, it's not. You want to be awkward? I didn't want to do this. I don't want to do this. How's that for awkward?
And that went exactly as planned. Tonight, we're not talking about lust. We're actually talking about anger. This is Max, and he was in on this the whole time. That was not one of Stephen Haggerty's guitars. We bought a cheap guitar to get that shock and awe feeling in you. So give it up for Max. He's not angry. I'm very impressed that he broke that guitar like that. I've tried to break a guitar like the rock stars do. And I can't do it. We are not talking about lust, just in case you're confused. We are going to talk about anger. We're going to talk about wrath. And I think that every single one of us in here at some point have experienced the feeling of anger. Maybe you haven't broken a guitar in a church service, but at some point in your life, you've experienced anger. You've gotten mad. You've done some type of damage. I don't want to raise your hands because you might get embarrassed, but some of you have punched a hole in a wall before. Some of you, like me, when playing video games, you got so mad you actually took your Nintendo controller and put it in your mouth and bit down on it as hard as you could, leaving teeth marks in your Nintendo controller to this day. Maybe that's just me, but some of you have gotten really angry over things. Some of you have slammed things. Some of you have thrown things. Some of you don't normally cuss, but when you get angry, words start flying out. You've gotten angry. You've gotten mad. Your blood had boiled about something, And this is a sin that made the list of the seven deadly sins. It is a sin that if we do not learn to control our anger, fix our anger, it will kill you spiritually. But the sin of anger is a little bit confusing because it's not just the fact that you get angry. We learn this from the definition of anger. Look at the definition of anger. It says a strong feeling of displeasure or hostility. A strong feeling of displeasure or hostility. So anger is simply a feeling. It's a feeling in the same way that laughter, when you think something is funny, that's a feeling. And it's not a sin to think something is funny. It's a feeling similar to when you're sad. That's a feeling. It is just a feeling that you have. So the act of anger, just the fact that you get angry alone, that's not a sin. In fact, if you look at this definition, a strong feeling of displeasure or hostility, that is the exact same thing that happens to you after you eat at Taco Bell. You get this strong feeling of displeasure or hostility. I think Taco Bell is the best tasting laxative in the world. Anger is simply a feeling. It's an emotion. In fact, not all anger is sin, and we know this because God himself gets angry. Look at what the Bible says. It says, God is a righteous judge, a God who displays his wrath every day. Now, I want to talk about that just for a second. God is a righteous judge. We're not afraid of judges when they're good. You should be afraid of a judge that's corrupt. If you can trust a judge, they're going to make the right decision on your behalf. And we have a God that is a righteous judge. That means he is full of goodness. He can't make a bad mistake. He does not make any mistakes. He has no sin in him. He is a righteous judge. But look at the second part of that. A God who displays his wrath every day. I don't know what that means. I don't know how God displays his wrath every day. I don't know. And some of you might be thinking right now, does that mean that when there's a tornado, that's the wrath of God? I hope not. I don't think so. But somehow, God shows his wrath every day. And I don't know what that looks like. But what I do know is that God gets angry. There is something that happens in this world that makes God angry. But because he is a righteous judge, because he is good, his anger is not sin. Which leads to a conflicting feeling when then God turns around and says this to us. He says, refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. So God gets angry every day, but then he looks to us and says, dude, you better turn from anger. Get away from wrath. Why? Because it only leads to evil. So anger's okay for God, but it's not okay for us. That feels a little conflicting to me. I actually like this next verse better. It says, for as churning cream produces butter, and as twisting the nose produces blood, so stirring up anger produces strife. That's so poetic. When I read that verse, I don't know why, but I hear it in the voice of Dwight K. Schrute. I don't know if you're a fan of The Office, but I could just hear, if you're not a fan, don't worry, you won't get this next joke at all, but I could just hear Dwight K. Schrute saying, fact, churning cream produces butter. Fact, twisting the nose produces blood. Fact, bears like beets. Fact, stirring up anger produces strife. And just going on with his day. Fact, like stirring up anger produces strife. It is not something that you want in your life. This is anger is a sin. It is a bad thing. But I don't know about you, but this kind of is conflicting to me. Because if God can get angry, and then we are created in the image of God, so our anger is actually his fault. The reason that we get angry is because he gets angry. And I almost feel like it's one of those things, like it's a bad parenting technique, where the parent does something really, really bad, and then looks at the kid and says, hey, I want you to do as I say, not as I do. That's awful parenting. We should have parents that are modeling the way for our kids to act. And so I feel like there's something almost like wrong here. Like, how can God get angry and then tell us not to get angry? Well, this has been something that the church has wrestled with for literally like hundreds of years. And the conclusion that they've come to is that there must be two types of anger. Not all anger is sin. Some anger is sin. In fact, the two types of anger are, number one, a righteous anger. There is a righteous anger, and that whenever God gets angry, this is a righteous anger. That means it's a holy anger. It's okay when God gets angry because it's a good cause. And anytime you get angry and it's a righteous angry, that's a okay. That's not a sin. the sin that was written in the seven deadly sins is the second type of anger, and that's an unrighteous anger. An unrighteous anger. So I want to talk about this just a little bit. What is a righteous anger? Like specifically, and the best definition I could find of a righteous anger is this. It is the right response to sin. A righteous anger, if you want to know if you're sinning or not, look at your anger and say, hey, is this the right response to sin? You see, you and I were given the emotion of anger, and it is not a sin just because you feel the emotion of anger. That's not the sin. The sin is what you do with that anger. And the problem is that we get angry over things that don't matter, and we don't get angry over things that do matter. We get angry over things like our team losing a game or a ref calling a bad call. We get angry over things like dropping our keys or getting cut off in traffic. We get angry over things that do not matter. And then there are things in this world that do matter, that actually make God angry, and we don't even care about them. And that's where the sin of anger comes in. Now, I'm not just like casting stones at you here. Like, I deal with this. I had taken up a new diet. It is a 21-day challenge where I have to eat a specific menu and walk 10,000 steps a day. And in order to count my steps, I have to wear a pedometer. I feel like I'm wearing a pager with this thing. This was actually my mom's pedometer. And today, in case you're wondering, I have 7,330 steps. So I still have a few steps to go. So if I start running in place, it's not because the Holy Spirit got a hold of me. It's because I got to get to 10,000 steps. But this is, my goal is to run 10,000 steps or to walk 10,000 steps. And so I have to keep this thing on all the time. And the problem with it is it's always flipping off, and including like when I get out of the car, it rubs against the seatbelt and it just flops off. Well, we went on Friday to Walmart to go shopping, and the whole parking lot was just a slushy mess. And when I got out of the car, this stupid pedometer plopped up and it went under the car into a slushy mess. I was mad. I was angry. I said, this stupid thing, I hate this thing. And Monica said, what is wrong? And I couldn't even tell her. I was so angry. And at the end of the day, does a pedometer falling into slush matter? No. And your anger, most of the things that you get angry over, and most of the things that I get angry over, they just don't matter. When I was in college, I worked at a really large church, and we had a large youth group. And I was an intern, and the youth pastor that I worked under had this culture of pranking. And they would do like these pranks to each other. When we went to camp, they would short sheet beds. On like a almost weekly event during the summer, they would go to people's houses and do things like flamingo a yard. They would buy flamingo like lawn, you know, the lawn animals, and put like 100 in their yard, like just of these flamingos. Or they would fork a yard. They would buy thousands of forks and just put it all in someone's yard. Or they would toilet paper. They're always doing this. And I hated pranking. I always told them, no, nothing good comes to pranking. And if I get caught pranking, someone's going to get me back. And I don't have to clean up 1,000 flamingos. So I don't do pranking. Well, one night I was hanging out with a group of students. And they just were going on and on and on. We got to prank. We got to prank. Come on, let us prank. And I finally gave in. And I said, okay, there's going to be some rules. Number one, I'm going to take you someplace, but I'm not getting out of the car. So if you get caught, my name's not to come up. I have nothing to do with this. It is all on you. And number two, we're not pranking another student because I don't want them to think we're picking on them. We are going to prank one of our adults, one of our Sunday school teachers, one of the small group leaders, one of the ones that likes this whole pranking thing. And so they agreed to that. So they got a bunch of toilet paper, and they wanted to toilet paper the house. And I said, no, we're not going to toilet paper the house. We'll toilet paper a tree. So I talked them into that, and so this Sunday school leaders, they lived in Pocosin, so we drove from Hampton to Pocosin and pulled up in front of their house, and I turned off the lights and was all stealth mode, and we were all in black. They were all in black. I didn't change clothes. I was in my normal clothes. And they're out there throwing toilet paper up in the trees, and they'd thrown about 3 or 4 rolls and hadn't completed the rolls, just kind of thrown it up 3 or 4 times up, and all of a sudden the porch light of the house that we were toilet papering comes on. And the students freak out, and they start to scatter like when roaches scatter when you turn the lights on. They're like literally diving in my car, jumping over the hood, like just pouring in, saying, go, go, we got to get out of here. And so I'm like kind of taking my time thinking, you know, I'm glad they got caught. This is going to prove them, you know, prove me right, and it's going to teach them a lesson. And so I'm kind of going just a little bit slow, and they're like screaming and freaking out. And I see the Sunday school couple come out, and they were a little bit older couple, and they come walking out first, and they see the toilet paper, and they just kind of are laughing. But all of a sudden, from back behind them, this guy that I'd never seen before comes busting out and, like, literally pushes through them and runs off their porch and is running at us. And at this time, I'm getting a little freaked. I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. So I hit gas, and I start driving away, and I'm thinking, we got away with this. You know, they thought it was funny, no big deal. And so I'm driving, and all of a sudden, I'm driving down, like, the main road in Pocosin, and this car comes flying behind me and is riding its horn and is on my bumper, and I look in my rearview mirror, and it's the guy that had run out of the house. Now, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know what he was doing there, but he was mad, like fire mad, face red. He is cussing. He is screaming. He is laying on his horn, and he is riding my bumper, and it's really unsafe. And I've got a group of middle school students in my car. So we're driving down, and we are coming up to the only stoplight in Pocosin, and I think to myself, I'm going to lose this guy. Here's what I'm going to do. He pulled beside me, and so he could yell at me so I could see his face, and I didn't put my blinker on, so he didn't know what I was going to do. And at the stoplight, I was going to turn right, and then he would be forced to go straight, and we were going to lose him, and this whole thing would be over with. And so we're at the light. He's screaming at me. He's laying on his horn. He's cussing at me. The light turns green. I wave by, turn right, and go down the other way, and I think, okay, we've lost him. But like a good horror movie, this joker reappears about 2 minutes later. And he is on my bumper, and he is honking, and he is yelling, and he is cussing. And at this point, I'm really scared. Like, not just kind of scared, I'm worried, because it's not just me. I've been given the custody of a group of middle school students, and their parents are trusting me to take care of them. And now my worst nightmare has come true, because I hated pranking, and we're about to die over toilet papering someone's house. So this guy is just like, he is riding our bumper, like literally about to hit me. He is screaming, he is honking. And I tell the students, I said, here's what we're going to do. We got to get someplace safe. I can't just pull over the side of the road because I don't know what this guy's going to do. I'm going to go back to one of your houses, and one of their parents lived in Michael's Woods, and I'm going to pull up. I'm going to leave the car running, make sure all our doors are unlocked, and I want you to pour out the right side of our car and run into the house. Run as fast as you can because I don't know what this guy's going to do. So we pull in front of the house, Michael's Woods. I leave the car running. The doors are unlocked. The students pour out, just like flop out of the car and run up into the house to go into the house at Michael's Woods. And I hop out of the car because this guy is like literally thinking about like chasing them. I can just see it in his eyes. And he meets me at the car and he is in my face and he is screaming and spitting. And I'm thinking this guy's about to hit me. And I'm like listening to him and he is just screaming about how dare we pick on someone so nice. And he names the couple's name. And he's like, I can't believe it. And he's just screaming. And I said, buddy, you need to calm down. I said, first of all, I'm a youth pastor, and they are in my ministry. And all the kids are in their Sunday school class. And I guarantee if you go back there and ask them, they're going to be laughing about this. And he said, I didn't know that. And he turned away, and he went in his car. And I was like, like, I thought I was just going to get into a fist fight with some guy. Now, the question that I have is, why was that guy so angry? Like, I get being frustrated. But why was he that angry that he was willing to put people's lives at stake? That he was really willing to, like, ride someone's bumper and, like, honk the horn? Why was he that angry? And my theory is that guy was angry long before he ever saw his toilet papering ended up being his girlfriend's house. He just had anger inside of him. And we can't judge that guy because every single one of you is the exact same. There is an anger inside of you. And something happens and it just boils up and you may be the most laid back person, but when that one person says that one thing that just hits your trigger, you want to go off on them. And maybe you can control your mouth, but inside you are raging. Why do we have such a passionate anger? Why do we get so mad? It's because God has anger. So the question is not, is all anger sin? No. Some anger is not sin. The question is, how do we have anger and not sin? And that's what we're going to find out tonight. Because Jesus actually modeled for us how to be angry and not sin. And I want to show you this through a story, something that happened to Jesus. Jesus is headed to the synagogue, and the synagogue is very similar to a church, but it's kind of like church on steroids. It was a very holy place for the Jewish religion. Jesus was a Jew, and so Jesus is going to the synagogue, and this is what happens. Pick up with me. It's going to come on the screen. It says, another time, Jesus went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath, I want to stop there just for a second and kind of break down what's going on. It says another time, and it is implying this is in the middle, near the end of Jesus' story. Jesus has not just come on the scene. He's been doing this thing for about 3 years. And he went from being very, very popular to the Pharisees, who are the religious leaders. They'd become jealous of Jesus. And so they constantly were looking for a reason to kill Jesus. But they were going to do it in a lawful way, because there were lots of laws in the Jewish religion that if you disobeyed them, the penalty was death. And one of those laws was if you messed up the Sabbath, if you disobeyed on the Sabbath. Now, if you grew up in church, you know what the Sabbath is. Maybe you're very familiar with it. If you're new to this church thing, I want to show you what the Sabbath is so you can understand this intensity of these religious leaders. The Sabbath comes from the Ten Commandments. And one of the Ten Commandments that God gave to the people of Israel was this: remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, neither your male or female servant, if you remember that from a few weeks ago, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So the illustration is that God created everything in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. Did he have to rest? No. God doesn't get tired. He doesn't need sleep. He rested to model for us how we're supposed to live. 6 days you work, 1 day you rest. But this isn't a rest where you just kick up in the hammock and watch football all day. This is a holy day where you rest in the presence of God. And this was something that they said, this is a commandment. This isn't a suggestion. This is a commandment from God. This is something that God takes very serious. And in their mind, they thought, if we break this commandment, we'll make God angry. So here's what they did. Instead of just saying, hey, we'll take this general rule of resting on the Sabbath and kind of figure out what that means, we're going to make it really, really specific. And so by the time Jesus comes on the scene, the religious leaders had added hundreds of rules to all of the commandments, including on resting on the Sabbath. That meant that you could only take 3,000 steps. Now, I don't know if they had some type of biblical pedometer that was like powered by the sun. I don't know how they counted their steps, but 3,000 steps is not that many. 10,000 steps is 5 miles. 3,000 steps in a culture where they didn't have cars and they walked everywhere is next to nothing. And somehow they had to walk out their door and start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And when they got to 2,099, they had to stop and they couldn't walk. If they took over 3,000 steps, the penalty was death. Now, God never said that. He never even implied that. They had taken this rule and become legalistic about it. So Jesus comes on the scene. These Pharisees are jealous of him. They want to find a way to kill him, and they see an opportunity. He walks into the synagogue, and they say, look, there's that guy with the shriveled hand. They don't even tell his name. I don't know what his name is. We'll call him Jojo. Jojo with the shriveled hand. There he is. He's here every Saturday. Saturday was the Sabbath day. They didn't go to church on Sunday. Jojo's here every Saturday. There's Jesus. What's Jesus going to do? We've seen him heal people before. I hope he heals Jojo. Because if he heals Jojo, then we can kill him because he's breaking the Sabbath law. So look at what happens next. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, Jojo, stand up in front of everyone. Then Jesus asked him, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they remained silent. He looked around at them in, what's that underlined word? Anger, and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. He said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. I don't know if you caught that, but we have two examples in this story of anger. We have the Pharisees, the religious leaders, they get angry because Jesus has broken a man-made rule about the Sabbath. He is healed. That's not against God, but they're furious at him. In fact, they are so mad, they plot to kill him. Their anger is leading them to want to kill an innocent man for doing what? For healing a guy with a shriveled hand. Now, contrast that with Jesus. Jesus gets angry, and I want to make sure that you get this. I really am tired of people thinking that Christianity is a nice, passive religion. It is not. Jesus didn't die for you to be nice and passive. It is okay to get angry. Jesus got angry. You need to be getting angry about certain things. You do. The problem is not that you can't get angry. The problem is you get angry about the wrong things. In fact, this is the main idea. Jesus' anger made the world a better place. What does your anger lead to? Jesus' anger, it's going to come up on the screens. I'll say it again. Jesus' anger makes the world a better place. What does your anger lead to? See, Jesus got angry, and why wasn't it sin? Because his anger led to making the world a better place. When you get angry, what does your anger lead to? Screaming, fighting, yelling, name-calling? Is your anger leading to make this world a better place? If the answer is no, then you are experiencing an unrighteous anger. And Jesus has called us not to become passive, not to stop caring about things, because that's apathy. And if you walk around this world and you don't give a rip about anything, that is spiritual apathy, and that will kill you dead. You need to get angry about some things. There are some things that are unholy and unright in this world. When you see that there are kids without a home, when there are orphans, it should cause you to get angry inside. When you see that there are kids being sexually abused, it should cause you to get angry inside. When you see a woman who is abused by her husband, that should cause some anger inside of you, even if you don't know them. When you hear stats like every 10 seconds a kid dies of AIDS, that should cause you to get angry. When you hear a stat like every 30 seconds a kid in Africa dies of malaria because they don't have the proper shots or a net to protect them from mosquitoes, that should cause you to get angry. It is okay to get angry for the things that make God angry, a righteous anger. And there are some things in this world that you should say, that's not right. I'm not going to be silent about that. And you need to know it's okay to get angry. It's just not okay to get angry about things that only matter to you. See, our anger is like a gauge. It's like at your house, you have a thermostat. And you look at the thermostat and it tells you the condition of the heat in your house. And your anger should tell the condition of your heart. You're going to get angry. It is an emotion that God has given you. But when you get angry, what is it telling you about your heart? Well, if you're angry about the things that make God angry, you're in the right place. But if you're angry about things that don't really matter, it's a sign that God doesn't have your heart. So I want to give you guys some application, a very practical verse, something for you to do. And this comes from a guy by the name of Paul. And Paul was a guy that didn't walk around with Jesus. He didn't hang out with Jesus' posse, his crew. He came after Jesus, but he was the guy that really started the Christian movement. And he was a missionary, went all around the world, and he wrote letters that we now have. It makes up the majority of the New Testament. And in one of Paul's letters, he addresses this thing of anger. And I can't help but think that the reason he says what he says is because he knew Jesus got angry. Look at what Paul says to us. He says, "In your anger, do not sin." I want to stop there just for a second. I think that if Paul did not know that Jesus got angry, he would simply say, if you get angry, it is a sin. But he doesn't. He says, in your anger, do not sin. So how do you do that? Well, when you feel your blood rising, when you feel yourself getting really upset, you need to ask yourself, is this a righteous anger or is it an unrighteous anger? And if it's a righteous anger, then you have a right to be angry and God's actually happy about it. Get angry. But if it's an unrighteous anger because you've dropped your keys or you dropped your pedometer or the traffic is bad or you're running late, then you need to take a chill pill. You need to calm down and say, God, forgive me. This is a sign of my heart. You don't have my heart because I'm angry about things that don't really matter. In your anger, do not sin. He goes on to say, do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Now, I think that's really important. And I think the reason he says, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry and don't give the devil a foothold is because something happens. At least it does with me. If I'm angry about something, there's a good chance that if I get a good night's sleep, I'll wake up the next day and I won't feel as angry anymore. And if you have a righteous anger that should lead you to make a difference in the world, you need to stop what you're doing and make the difference now. Because if you wait, you may not feel that angry about it the next morning. So if there's something that you see, if you see an injustice in the world, don't think, oh, I'll take care of that tomorrow. Why? Because the devil will get a foothold. And how does the devil get a foothold? He makes you stop caring about it. Maybe it wasn't that big of a deal. Maybe that bruise on her face wasn't from her husband. Maybe someone else will pay for kids to get vaccines. Maybe someone else will make a difference in the world. The devil gets a foothold not because we get angry. It's because our anger is aimed at things that don't really matter. And the devil gets a foothold because when we do get angry at things that do matter, he causes us to forget and not really think about it. So tonight, what I want you to do is I want you to spend a few seconds simply talking to God. And I want you analyzing. This is where the introspection comes. I want you thinking of your heart. What does your anger tell about you? What does your anger lead to? Does your anger lead people to fall more in love with God? Does your anger lead to make this world a better place? Or does your anger lead to things you regret? Some of you tonight, the simple application, what you need to do is you just need to ask someone to forgive you. Because you've hurt them with your words, you've hurt them with your tone, you haven't asked them for forgiveness, you haven't said sorry. And so some of you, after this service, don't let the devil get a foothold. Do not go to sleep on this. Some of you need to make a phone call and say, hey, I know the big game's on, but I just need to say sorry for the words that I said to you. I'm sorry for the way that I treated you. My anger was not an anger that represented God well. And some of you, though, just need to spend some time talking to God and saying, God, hey, would you change my heart? It's been exposed to me. You've shown me today that my heart is not fully yours. Would you change the condition of my heart so that when I get angry, it is a righteous anger that represents you well? So I'm not going to tell you exactly what to say. I just want to challenge you to spend some time talking to God. If you would, bow your heads, close your eyes, and spend the next few moments praying, asking God to forgive you, asking God to give you wisdom, asking God to give you strength to do what you need to do.